Welcome to Spoon Press Audio, the podcast for your daily story fix with your host, author, and award-winning entrepreneur, Anna M.
Welcome back to Spoon Press Audio. My name is Anna M, and today I'm going to be reading to you chapter 10 of my story, Don't Know Jack. But before we get into that, just a quick reminder that if you're curious about the story behind these stories and what inspired me to create Spoon Press Audio, you're welcome to turn back to episode 1 of this podcast, where I am sharing my own personal testimony. But for now, and without any further ado, here then is chapter 10 of my story, Don't Know Jack. Still staring at the yellow raincoat when there comes a loud bashing from the front door inside the flat. Startled, Jack and Charlotte look at each other. Susanna! Jack cries, and before Charlotte can stop him, he pushes his way past her. Jack, wait! She hesitates, then follows him. In the living room, Jack stops dead in his tracks. He stops so suddenly that Charlotte nearly runs into his back. But when she sees what he's looking at, she gasps. Two men in black suits wearing black face coverings are standing in the kitchen amongst the ruins of what used to be the front door. And if that wasn't enough to instill fear in any heart, each of the men is armed with a machete. Some kind of animal instinct makes Jack's body react. He spins around, bundling both himself and Charlotte back into the tiny bathroom. The last thing he sees before he slams the door shut is the two men heading their way, blades raised. Shit, 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 Jack mutters, while his fingers fumble to turn the lock on the door. Then the men hammer on it. Jack and Charlotte both jump back. What is going on? Charlotte stammers. Who are they? What do they want? I don't know, Jack says, his throat thick with fear. More hammering, louder. Jack scans the small bathroom. There's no way out. There's no window. They're trapped. The next moment, after a single thump, the tip of a machete pierces the wooden door and Charlotte cries out in fright. She grabs Jack's arm. What are we going to do? She cries. Another thud. Wood splinters as the machete hacks a sliver through the door. It is only a matter of seconds before the men are through. They don't have a chance. Jack, over here. It takes a second for the voice to register. Jack turns his head to see the woman from the pool looking back at him from the mirror. Come in here, she extends her hand. Quickly. What is it? Charlotte asks, watching his face as he stares at the mirror. The woman from the pool, he stammers. She wants us to climb into the mirror, I think. But the woman shakes her head. Only you, Jack. She can't come with us. What? Jack exclaims. I can't leave her here. Charlotte grabs his shoulders and forces him to look at her. Jack, who are you talking to? He blinks for a second and then opens his mouth to speak. But there is another hack of the machete and more wood splinters cascade over the bathroom floor. Now, Jack, the woman orders. Come on. She leans forward and her hands protrude from the surface of the mirror. Shocked, frozen, Jack can only look at it, his mind refusing to believe what he is seeing. But then, suddenly, time seems to slow. An unnatural calm comes over him. With a certainty he's never felt before, Jack says, "Not without Charlotte." Jack! Charlotte screams his name just as a gloved hand appears through the gaping hole in the door and begins to feel around for the handle, and then the door is flung open. There's no more time. Jack takes hold of the woman's wrist and feels her fingers curl around his arm before he is yanked towards the mirror. In the last millisecond, he grabs hold of Charlotte's hand with his free hand before both of them crash into the mirror. Or rather, that's what Jack expected to feel. But instead of his face connecting with the cold, hard surface of the mirror, he finds himself falling right through. And, with her hand in his, Charlotte comes toppling after. When Jack was 7 years old, his parents won a cruise on a luxury yacht in a game of bingo. His mother was very excited. It would be their first real holiday in years. She bought a new swimsuit, a red one, and a hat. They left on a Wednesday, taking the taxi to the airport. Jack stayed behind with his grandmother, and the two of them stood waving as the cab drove off. His mother blew him a kiss through the window. Intrigued by the idea of boats and sailing the seas, Jack wrote a story about it the next day at school. Only, in the story, there was a great big storm, the boat capsized, and everyone on board was eaten by monstrous sharks. It was a great story. He never meant for it to come true. On the third day of his parents' cruise, the yacht apparently encountered a surprise storm and lost contact. For 4 days, patrol vessels searched the sea for any sign of the yacht, with no avail. On the fifth day, a fisher boat spotted something floating in the water, and upon closer inspection discovered that it was the body of a woman wearing a red swimsuit. His father was never found, not even after some remains of the yacht had washed up on shore. There were lawsuits, and in the end, the people who had organized the competition for the cruise paid out a sum of money to the victims' families. It supported Jack and his grandmother for years, covering their monthly overheads and Jack's school fees. And when Jack developed an intense fear of water and his grandmother decided to take him for swimming lessons, the money from the lawsuit paid for those as well. Jack was pretty good at the swimming thing, as it turned out. This came in handy when, towards the end of his high school years, a corrupt investor swindled his grandmother out of the remainder of their money, and Jack was still able to go to university on a swimming scholarship. The stress of it all, however, had caused his grandmother to have a series of strokes, the last of which proved fatal. She passed away when Jack was 22, leaving him alone with the ever-present guilt over the death of his parents, a degree in journalism, and an idea for a novel. A novel, he had thought, that would one day fix it all and redeem him as a writer. For months now, Jack hasn't thought about any of this, but now, as he slowly surfaces back to consciousness, it all comes flooding back like a tsunami. The heartbreak, the guilt, the pain of his loneliness pulling him back into his body with a vengeance. He cries out, a raw and gut-wrenching sound. "It's okay," a voice says soothingly. "You're safe. It's okay. Just breathe." Jack opens his eyes and realizes that he's lying on his back, looking up, just as he had been previously at the leisure center after the incident in the water. But this time, instead of Charlotte's angelic face looking down at him, it is the woman he had first seen in the pool, the one who had yanked him through the mirror. "Wait." Yanked him through the... Jack's body suddenly retches, and he rolls over just in time as the vomit comes gurgling up his throat. He spits it out and lies coughing and shivering. "Sorry about that," the woman says. "I'm afraid we had no time to lessen the impact of the crossing. We had to get you out of there as soon as possible. But your body will adjust, don't worry. Here, drink this." Jack's head is throbbing down into his neck and his hands are still shaking. He keeps wanting to throw up, even though there's nothing more to come out. It is like the worst kind of motion sickness he's ever experienced. He takes the glass and looks at the thick blue liquid inside, hesitating. The strong, pepperminty smell is already burning his nose and bringing tears to his eyes. "It will help with the nausea," the woman says. At the word nausea, another wave of mucus pushes up in his throat. Bringing the glass to his lips, Jack desperately swallows the blue stuff down in one go. A mistake, clearly, for he starts to cough. He coughs and coughs until his throat feels raw. and then it hits him. Charlotte, he remembers and sits up. Where's Charlotte? The room around him is empty and all white. He struggles to find the corners or locate a door. Relax, the woman says. Your friend is okay. We sent her back. Back? Jack struggles to his feet, fighting back the nausea and the pain in his head. No, no, she can't go back. Those men will... Not back to the bathroom, Jack. Back to her home. She's safe there, don't worry. She's asleep. When you get back, you can... What do you mean, asleep? What have you done to her? Did you drug her? Jack's head is spinning now. He has difficulty retaining his balance, for there's no focus point in this white abyss to steer himself by. Why don't you take a seat, Jack? The woman says. Her voice is calm but authoritative. The sound of it calms him a bit. Sit, she says again, and points to something next to him. When he looks, there is a chair. So he sits. How's the head? The woman asks. Better. Now, if we show you where your friend is, will that help? Jack hesitates, then nods. It's a lie. He's almost certain it won't help, but he needs to know that Charlotte is safe. The woman makes a circle with her hand in the air, and a mirror appears, hanging in front of them in the air. Reflected in the mirror's glass, Jack can see a bedroom with a wardrobe, a small desk, and a bed. There is a figure on the bed, lying motionless. Charlotte! He wants to jump up, but the woman simply lifts her hand again and his legs won't obey him. She's fine, the woman says. Again, she motions with her hand and the reflection zooms in on the figure on the bed. It is certainly Charlotte, dressed in the same clothes she'd been wearing moments before when she was with him in the bathroom. He can see now that she's breathing, as her chest moves slowly up and down. She looks, indeed, peacefully asleep. We don't really have time to explain, the woman says, but not everyone can cross from your world into this one. If you think your sickness now was bad, the transition would have killed your friend. Just the near entrance knocked her out cold. She'll sleep for a day or so, but she'll be okay. And when she wakes up, she won't have any memory of what happened. Jack shakes his head. I want to go to her, he insists, stubbornly. Not before we've talked, the woman says. And again there is the tone of authority that robs Jack of any sort of comeback. She lifts her hand again and clicks with her fingers. And when Jack turns around, he sees them. The girl who had been wearing the yellow raincoat, and the woman he had seen sitting in the bus. They move forward and wordlessly take their places next to the older woman. Seeing the three of them standing side by side now, Jack instantly understands that they are not three different people, but rather one being in three forms. It is a recognition, a knowing. There is no rational ground for it. He notices Mr. Beducci's book in the girl's hands. So it was you who took it, he says. We couldn't leave it there. It is the girl who speaks, in the girl's voice, but all three of their mouths are moving, shaping the words. We had to keep it from falling into the wrong hands. Jack rubs the sides of his face. Why are you doing this to me? He asks. Why is this happening? What have I done to deserve this? It is the older woman who speaks now. But again, all of their mouths move. We are so sorry, Jack. This was not how it was supposed to happen. We thought we had more time. But the sky is already turning. The darkness has already begun infiltrating. And they are looking for you. They know who you are. You are in grave danger, Jack. We have left it too long. Wait, Jack frowns. Did you just say the sky is turning? The sky, as in the title of that book? The girl nods. The one you're going to write one day. The Turn of the Sky by Jack Forrest. I am not, Jack begins, but then he stops, for an image has just flashed before his eyes. The story he had written in school when he was 8, the one about the boat and the storm. At the top of the page he had written his name in blue ink letters, only he had started too close to the edge of the page. Instead of writing Forrester, there was only enough space to write Forrest. Jack Forrest, his teacher had said when she saw it. Now there's a great name for a writer. That is then the end of chapter 10 of my story, Don't Know Jack. I hope you enjoyed it. I will see you soon with chapter 11. Please remember to rate and subscribe this podcast and send me your feedback to spoonpress_uk@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Thank you guys. Till next time. Bye.
Welcome, all story lovers. Dive into the enchanting world of Spoon Press Audio, your go-to podcast for a daily dose of fiction. Whether you fancy brainy masterminds, gutsy heroes, or cheeky lovers, we've got stories to captivate you and sweep you away from the ordinary humdrum of your day. Created by the award-winning author and entrepreneur, Anna M., Spoon Press Audio is a perfect blend of laughter, intrigue, and suspense. But also, these stories are specially designed to boost your brain power and mental well-being. So be sure to hit the subscribe button wherever you listen to podcasts. Join us on an epic adventure only at Spoon Press Audio.